Morning, everyone. Welcome to the Committee on Government Oversight. My name is Nate Libby. I proudly represent the people of Lewiston in the Senate, and I serve as Senate co-chair. We'll continue with introductions of committee members, and I'll start with my colleague on my left.
Good morning. My name is Holly Stover. I represent House District 89, including the towns of Boothbay, Boothbay Harbor, Southport, Edgecombe, Westport Island, and South Bristol, and I am the House Chair.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Representative Jessica Fay. I represent House District 66, which is parts of the towns of Casco, Poland, and Raymond.
Good morning. I'm Soren Millett. I represent House District 71, including the citizens of Norway, Sweden, Waterford, and West Paris.
Hi, I'm Rick Bennett. I have the honor of serving 13 towns in Western Maine, the greater Freiburg area, the Oxford Hills, and the Lakes region, in the Maine Senate. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Senator Susan DeChambeau, district, I forgot now. I'm getting ready. I represent Dayton, Lyman, Alford, Arundel, Kennebunkport, and my hometown of Biddeford. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa Keim, and I'm proud to represent Senate District 18, which is northern Oxford County, in two communities of Androscoggin.
Good morning. I'm Senator Jeff Timberlake, and I represent parts of Androscoggin and Kennebec County.
Thank you. And we're joined by our staff from the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability, Peter Schleck, who's the director, Sabrina Carey, who's a committee clerk, and analysts who might be with us from time to time as well. Turning to our agenda, the first item we have is a review of the meeting summary from the September meeting. It is quite a lengthy summary. Let us know if you have any edits or questions. Seeing none, we'll move on to the second item on our agenda, which is the Maine Wild Blueberry Commission status update. I'll share that we've had numerous discussions with members of the Agriculture Committee. I know that lawmakers on this committee have had those discussions. Staff have had discussions with committee analysts. We've also communicated with the Washington County delegation, asking if they see this as an important item for us to keep on our to-do list. It seems like this issue is well handled by the Ag Committee, so I'd suggest there's no further action that GOC take at this time. I'm not sure, Peter, if we need a motion to take this off our list. Okay, so a motion to take this off our list, clear that deck. Moved by Senator Timberlake, seconded by Senator Keim. Discussion? All in favor? It's unanimous, those present. Moving on to agenda item number three, Child Protective Services. We have had a response from DHHS with respect to the subpoena that was issued. I guess I'll turn it over to Peter to just sort of set the table.
Sure. So at this point, there was indeed a response. It was addressed to the chairs, Chair Libby and Chair Stover, along with the leads, Senator Keim and Representative Arata. And it was dated October 6, 2022. And it lodged a formal objection to the committee subpoena and indicated that basically reiterated the prior opinion of the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Child Protection Division as grounds for why they felt the law did not permit them to comply.
So, you know, at this time, what are the options for the committee?
So, if I may, Senator, there is a provision in law under Title III where the committee can seek to apply to the Superior Court to seek obedience with the subpoena. So that is a provision. So the committee by motion could vote to direct the Attorney General representative for the committee to apply to the Superior Court to enforce obedience with the subpoena.
pleasure of the committee. Senator Timberlake?
I definitely believe that we need to push this subpoena forward. I think it's something that's very pertinent to what happens to the people of the state of Maine, and they want to know what happened, and I think it's pertinent that we know what happened and where the system failed in, not in the prosecution of the death of children, because I believe the law enforcement agency will take that into their hands. But I want to know, I need to know what happened in DHHS, where that failed, and where, and how we get to the bottom of it is, you know, my grandfather taught me a long time ago, trust but not verify. But I think it's very important that we push this subpoena forward. So I'd make a motion to push forward.
So can we clarify what the motion?
Sure. The most.
Make a motion to that effect.
The motion would be the decision to apply the Superior Court to compel the ordinance to the subpoena issued by the committee shall be investigated by the committee's action. I move that this committee push forward with the DHS having to comply with our subpoena.
Okay. Motion's been made to apply to the Superior Court to enforce the subpoena. It's been seconded by Representative Arata. Is there further discussion? Representative Stover.
I have a question for Peter, and maybe you can't answer this, but what's your sense if we were to move forward with that filing with the Superior Court, given that we have a relatively short amount of time left? Is it likely the Superior Court would be able to hear that? And maybe that's for AAG Taub to answer. I open that question to either one of you. What's the likelihood of us hearing anything back?
Thank you, Chair Stover. I would defer to Chief Deputy Attorney General Taub.
So it's very hard to predict. I think, as I told the committee when I was here the last time, it's really up to the court in terms of the scheduling. I will say that just my perception of, we'd be filing Kennebec County Superior Court. And just my perception is that they have a lot on their docket right now. And there's a lot of things that are going to be ahead of us. It's not clear to me whether the court might give priority to something like this or whether it might just be sort of put into the usual course. I can only make sort of my best prediction. And I doubt that we'd have a final resolution from the Superior Court by the end of the year. It's possible, but if you're just asking me sort of what my best estimate is, I think this will probably be carrying over into the next year.
And I was just curious about the time frame. It doesn't impact whether to do it or not, but I just wanted a better understanding of what it looks like down at the court. Thank you.
Things are very busy there right now.
Further questions, comments? Senator DeChambeau, followed by Senator Bennett.
Thank you. I think the appeal or going to Superior Court is as a result of their decision. And if I remember correctly, I'm sure I do because of the statute, we hit a roadblock when I asked the question, please define legislative official, and they could not define legislative official as to which person or who could have access to that. So I think we would probably, the only way that can be changed is through legislative action, would it not? You know, we're going one path with the court, and if it rules in our favor that we have access to it based on that, is that something that the court focuses on, or?
So I think if I understand your question, Senator, there's an open question right now about whether the current provision that you're referring to would apply to the GOC. So that's what we're going to be asking the court,
yes,
to rule on, is whether or not the members of the GOC are, right, legislative, and I don't know the exact language, but are legislative officials responsible for child protection activities. if the court could resolve that. But there's also a separate avenue, and I don't know if this is what you're asking, but there's a separate avenue, which is there could be legislation which would make perfectly clear that the GOC are officials to whom child protection records must be disclosed.
Within our responsibilities and function, obviously.
Right, so that could be cleared up through legislation, regardless of what the court does. Even if the court says the GOC does not qualify, of course, the legislature could still overrule that and pass a law that says, yes, they are.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bennett?
I'm in favor of the motion. It's regrettable, but it's come to this, that the executive branch interprets legislative official, if not actually including legislators. If there's any legislative official, it is the legislators themselves. And the notion that they could, in any world, any normal sense of functioning and definitions and to suggest that and take the position in seriousness that legislative officials do not include legislators. It's bizarre, it's stunning, and we need to pursue this. We need to do our job. We're policymakers, we're investigators, we're supposed to be holding the executive branch to account. There's no more important issue than this one before us. And we need to resolve this issue. And I guess we need to go to the courts to have them make a decision here. But there's the immediate issue, obviously, that we need. This is going to delay it, unhappily, perhaps, in the functioning of our work. But there's this larger issue that we need to attend to, which is the authority of the legislature itself and the ability of the legislature to hold any executive to account on any issue. And so I think that pursuing this course is necessary. It's necessary for this issue, but it's necessary for the functioning of the legislature as contemplated by the Constitution. Thank you.
If I may, Senator Libby, I just wanted to clarify something. I may have misspoken or not been clear, but the issue is not going to be whether members of the GOC are legislative officials. Clearly, they are. But what the statute says is an appropriate legislative official with responsibility for child protection services. So that's going to be the issue that the court is going to be considering.
Further comments or questions? Senator Kahn.
So I'm absolutely in favor of the pending motion. We need to move forward with taking this to court, and it is in the wheelhouse of the department to have obeyed the subpoena, and they didn't. I agree. I think the law gives us this right. So I think moving forward, we have to actually stake our ground and say, you know, this is our role, this is our right, or we just lose it by default. But my other question for you, Chris, AEG Tom, is what are the next steps? So what I don't want to do is, we've had quite a delay. I don't want to delay this on our end. So if you need us to meet, if we need to make decisions, I do want to know that. That's probably after the vote. But, you know, if we need to meet again next week or the week after or whatever, I don't want to wait because our schedule is a monthly meeting. That delay is really unacceptable to me at this point. So, yeah, so I'd like to hear from you.
So thanks, Senator. That's a great question. I was actually kind of thinking about that on the way up this morning. And this is my thought. I'm just throwing this idea out there. I don't know if this is something that the committee would want to entertain, but I am thinking of how we can move this through most efficiently. And, I think of the entire committee as my client, and so I'm going to do what the client instructs me to do. But typically, lawyers want to pass everything that they do past the client before they file it in court. So if the committee votes today to file an action in court, I'm going to go ahead and prepare the paperwork. But then I would want my client, whoever that is, to review it, make any edits, changes. I think it's gonna be cumbersome and slow things down if it's the entire committee that's gonna be reviewing and commenting on things. Although if that's the route the committee wants to take, I'm perfectly happy with that. It's just gonna be a little bit more cumbersome. So one thought I had is whether the committee wanted to vote to sort of delegate certain people who are gonna be sort of the representatives for the litigation. And then I would treat those persons as my client. So I would send drafts to them, make whatever edits they want. Again, this is just my thought. If it's not something the committee wants to entertain, that's perfectly fine. But I'm just thinking of ways to sort of expedite this and make this move as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Yes, that's a good idea. I would also wonder if it would be valuable for our committee to send a letter to the Corps and ask them and portray to them the urgency of this matter from our perspective as well. I think it is very unusual. And yes, I understand they're very busy, but moving forward with this is also you know, very important to us as well. So I don't know if you have a suggestion around that, but I think we should be reaching out to the courts as well and saying, you know, this is urgent and important.
I think that's an excellent idea, Senator. I think what we really need to do is to make sure that the court, this case becomes as visible as possible in the court's eye. And I think the more that we can bring visibility to it, the better. And so I think a letter from this committee, which I think would be a very unusual thing for the court to get, would sort of trigger that this is something important, something that matters, and something that is important to really get going. So I think that's a great idea.
As a follow-up to that, if I may, if we vote to send that letter, I would like all the members to sign, if we could, if that's something we decide to do. Thanks.
Senator Timberlake.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tubbs, for my own clarification in a conversation that we've had, that the only thing that concerns me in this whole issue is how this moves forward. It seems like it's one department fighting the other department, which is the Office of the Attorney General. It seems like one man against the whole department. Do we have any other options other than that? Can you explain how this works and how that they don't overlap, how you're not influenced by the other? I have some, you know, if you gave me an option, I'd rather, you know, seek somebody that wasn't tied into the same office, and I need to have clarity of how that stays.
You know, that's a fair question. I think I addressed a little bit of that the last time I was here, but it's not uncommon for our office to create what we call a wall between some attorneys and other attorneys. And the Maine Supreme Court made clear in a case called Superintendent of Insurance versus the Attorney General that the Attorney General sometimes has obligations to represent two different agencies that are in conflict with each other. And so what the court said that the Attorney General's office can do in that situation is it can create a wall so that certain people within the office will represent one agency and other people in the AG's office will represent the other agency, and there'll be a wall between those two. So that's what we've set up in this case. So I don't have conversations or talk strategy or let people know what I'm thinking with anyone in the office who's representing DHS. So there's a wall between me and the people who are representing DHS interests. Now that said, you know, if the committee is not comfortable with that, I think another option for the committee, if it wanted to, would be to retain its own attorney to bring this. I'd have to sort of think about this a little bit, but I'm pretty confident that the legislature and legislative committees would be authorized to hire their own attorneys. So if you don't feel comfortable with the AG's office representing both sides in this dispute, I think that would be an option for you folks to consider.
Do you have any idea when, and I know this has been done in the past, and when this wall goes up, how many cases are won by what I call the minority side, because it's like one man against the thing, how that's broke down in the past? I mean, you're fighting against that whole team, you, and I think you're a great attorney and probably do everything you can to win. I'm not questioning that part, but it just kind of makes you nervous when you're, you know, I've hired a few attorneys in my day along the way.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you, I couldn't answer that question. I can tell you that this is not a case that is resource intensive. So there are some cases where, you know, it would be a serious disadvantage for it to be one attorney versus a lot of other attorneys. A case that involves a lot of documents or a lot of discovery, you know, then sort of being outpersoned can be a problem. This is not that kind of case. This is a case where I'm going to write a brief. The attorney for the department's going to write a brief. There might be an argument in Superior Court. And the fact that it's just me on one side and maybe four or five people on the other side is not going to make a difference in this kind of case.
Thank you.
Representative Millett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say I'm in support of the petition motion and also endorse the letter that Senator Keim has proposed. It seems to me that each of those two strategies could produce a result that would benefit our work going forward. In the case of the court, if the court were to get to it, whether it was before the end of the calendar year or soon thereafter, I would assume that they would address the issue of statutory clarification as to whether or not this body sits as a legislative official or officials with oversight or responsibility for child protective matters, and that their determination and response would be helpful if there is a need for statutory amendment in the 131st. Secondly, I think a letter would help not just the firewall issue that Senator Timberlake has proposed, but for the court to receive from this body and those in the audience that consist of at least three people that I'm thinking aloud on, have known that this committee over the last several biennia has spent an inordinate amount of time on child protective matters throughout the entire century, the 21st century. This has been a topic of major concern since the OPEGA statute was written. So I think a letter that had the input and approval of all members of the committee to stress that fact would be an important message for the court to hear. It doesn't put the Attorney General's office in the middle. It just says, from our perspective, and those that have been here a lot longer than I have, this has been a major responsibility of the Government Oversight Committee. And to not make that case known to the court, I think would be a failing on our part. So I would support both motions and or both suggestions and hope that the committee would endorse the letter with specifics and details of our legislative history.
Further comments or questions?
Just a question.
Senator Bennett.
Question for Representative Millett, who said that referred to people who've been here longer than he has, and I wonder who to whom he's referring.
Obviously, there are a lot of us who have been on here for two terms, and but there are some of you, the Senate Chair and the Senator from Turner, and a Senator in the audience, who have been a party to these discussions going over decades, and that is the reference.
Yes, if I may continue, Mr. Chair, I was being a little jocular there, but I think Representative Millett makes an excellent point here. And underlying that is this notion of the executive branch deciding for the legislature what topics, you know, how our internal functioning and what topics various committees and organizations within the legislature chooses to address. And it's stunning and it's bizarre, but there's only one resource that's been allocated, that's you, to for the committee's purposes here. Is that right?
That's right.
And so when you're talking strategy, you have nobody to talk with in the office. Is that right?
Yeah. And let me be clear. I have told the office that I don't feel I need additional resources for this case. If I felt that I did need additional resources, I suspect we would find a way to make that happen. But again, this is not a case that requires extensive resources. So I don't think that's a concern. But again, if the committee is not comfortable with the AG's office representing both sides, they have an option to hire their own attorneys.
I guess the question is, why is it the prerogative of the committee to hire our own attorneys when I believe the Attorney General is elected by the legislature in service of the people of Maine, should be representing the people's branch of government? Why is it not the other question as to why not have DHHS hire their own attorneys?
Well, we're charged with representing all branches of government, Senator. So again, I'm here to represent this branch of government, but our office at the same time has a statutory and constitutional responsibility to represent the executive branch. And that's what the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, has said, that we have conflicting obligations sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the way that we address that is by creating a wall and having certain people address one aspect of the issue and having other people address the other issue. We have to represent all arms of government.
Just back to the question, though, of internal functioning, you would not be comfortable going to the Attorney General himself and discussing strategy on this issue?
No, I would not be comfortable, and the wall that we have would prevent that. Now,
because he's on the other side of the wall.
He's on the other side of the wall. Yeah. Now, what I would do, if I felt there was some issue that I needed help with, I would likely have a discussion with the Attorney General about whether there are people that have so far not been involved at all in this matter, and whether we could put them on my side of the wall. Now, we haven't come to that. I haven't needed the help. Again, I've been a litigator in the AG's office for over 20 years. I'm very comfortable handling this case. But if I did need additional resources, there would be a way to make that happen.
Well, it's not for this forum, but I think we need to have an understanding at some point as a legislature as to how the Attorney General makes these calls about how he himself, in this case, is making these determinations about who to represent and what position he's taking here. It was clearly a preference for the executive branch. And I don't understand the rationale there, but it's not for you, Mr. Dobb, to answer. But I do think it's in the legislature's interest to understand that process better.
Senator Timberlake.
This is a question for you, Mr. Chair. Let's just say this committee decided that it wanted to, just as a hypothetical, wanted to hire its own attorney. What would be our process and our timeline to make something like that happen, or what do you feel that would be, or maybe Mr. Todd's can answer it, but if we wanted to, you know, that would be my question that I lay forward. Because we want this to happen now, you know. I wanted it to happen in January, and here we are, almost the end of October, and we're still in this almost the same spot we were then. And I don't see nothing happening now, and it's just stonewall, 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 and I don't know how to break down the wall.
I've not solicited an attorney for a legislative committee before, so I defer to others who might have some knowledge about how we might do that.
Silence makes you nervous.
I don't know if that's a matter for the Legislative Council that you'd have to get approval. I don't know. Apart from the funding, I mean, I think, you know, I could give you recommendations. I'm sure folks on the committee have recommendations. But in terms of the mechanics, what you would need to actually do to pay for it, I don't know. There may also be lawyers out there who would do this pro bono, because this is a case of some importance. I think there's a lot of public interest in it. So you may well find a very good lawyer who'd be willing to do this pro bono.
Silence always makes me nervous.
Further comments, questions? There's a motion on the floor to compel compliance with the subpoena by applying to the Superior Court. That's the motion as I understand it. It's been moved and seconded. I think the presumption is that the Deputy Attorney General would be the lawyer representing the committee. But we can have that be a separate discussion if the committee wishes.
I think we should vote on that motion, but then continue what we mentioned about how we would communicate with the board or with a select few.
going forward. I mean, we have to be on top of that.
Sure. Further discussion?
Ready.
Okay. I'll share. I don't think I'd be surprised. Committee members, I'm not in favor of this motion. I think the statute that the committee wants to hang its hat on is not clear. It was crafted, I think, 30 years ago before the GOC was ever conceived. I think the most efficient practical remedy to this ambiguity in the statute is across the way in the Senate and the House in January, when I would expect a bill to give the Government Oversight Committee access to these files directly and making it crystal clear that the Government Oversight Committee has access to those files. I expect that bill would get prompt, near unanimous, tripartisan support, and that files could be turned around fairly quickly. I also believe it could be a veto could be overridden on such a bill. So that, to me, is the cleanest, most straightforward, most efficient way to get access to these files, because members here want the GOC to sort of have new authority it's not had before. That's the way to accomplish that. You know, I think trying to hire outside counsel and filing something with the Superior Court, which is already overburdened with cases, I think is not a good use of time and resources. For that reason, I'm going to oppose the motion. However, I do want the committee to understand, as chair, I also have ministerial duties, and if the committee wishes, I can continue performing those ministerial duties without delay in terms of signing off on documents and so forth, but that's for the committee to decide. So I'll be opposing the motion. Further discussion? Seeing none, are we ready for the vote? All in favor? Oh, sorry. It's just, it's muscle memory. It's muscle memory. Sabrina, just let me know when you're ready. And those opposed? Motion carries. Chair would entertain another motion at this time. Senator Keim.
I would like to make a motion that we also send a letter to the Superior Court. I think that Representative Millett actually outlined it well, just asking that this matter be expedited and explain the reasons for the importance of it, and that whatever committee members are in favor of doing that, that we would also all be signing that letter, because I think it's a stronger letter when it has all of our names attached to it. So that is the motion that I would like to make.
Could I suggest a friendly amendment? Those members that wish to sign, speak with the staff to sign that letter. Is that okay? So that's the motion. If you wish to sign on to such a letter, you'll communicate your preference to the staff. Is there a second? Representative Arad, a second. Further discussion? All in favor? It's unanimous. Senator Beth.
I would be very comfortable having the chairs and leads be the effective agent to communicate for the committee with the Assistant Attorney General about the particularities of bringing the case, and would rely on the chairs to call the committee, convene the committee as necessary when appropriate, and would make that a motion.
Great motion. So the motion is to delegate to the chairs and leads authority to carry this matter forward and convene the committee as needed. Is there a second? Representative Fay seconded. Further discussion? Senator Chambell.
Find leads. I know what the leads are on sure. The committee, but
Senator Keim and Representative Arada are the leads. Are the minority leads? That's
interesting. Okay. No.
That's a compliment.
No. No reflection. I got to tell you. I've got to learn not to say everything that's in my head.
You've got time. You've got time. Further discussion? Folks understand the motion? All in favor? It's unanimous. Further discussion from the committee on the subject? Representative Millett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question while Attorney General Taub is here. Given the decision on one of the four children that died, unfortunately, in the summer of 21, a jury has convicted the mother. Is it possible in any fashion that this committee could have access to the transcript that deals with issues that might fall within the purview of our attempt to fix the problems going forward? In other words, I'm just asking a question of interpretation. Would that transcript, when available, be material that would be could be provided to this committee that might look at where oversight and where we could do things in the future to fix the problem?
That's a good question. The court transcripts are generally public documents. I don't know what's going to be reflected in the transcript that might inform the committee's analysis. I also don't know whether there's portions of the transcript that have been designated as confidential because they deal with child protection matters. But you know, certainly, we could look into to seeing to what extent transcripts from the trial are available. I'm not sure if I answered your question very, very helpfully or not, but again, court transcripts are generally public documents.
I think the determination of helpful probably rests with this committee now and in the future, given all of the effort that's gone in to make a decision that it's not going to be helpful without actually seeing and getting an interpretive reading of where things went awry, to me would be a failure on our part not to have access to that information.
I mean, not to throw Peter under the bus, but I wonder maybe if Peter, with his background, could look into to whether or not the trial transcripts are available and to what extent they can be given to the GOC.
I'd be happy to do so, Representative Millett.
Representative Barada.
Thank you. I noted that the original letter from the commissioner was concerned about interference with the trial or the trials. Now that one of the trials is over, wouldn't it be appropriate for them to send the to allow us to see that file for Maddox Williams? And perhaps we need another letter written to the department specifically asking for that file.
Thank you very much for the question, Representative Arata. It's a very good question in terms of, and if I may state, there was one trial that concluded yesterday with a jury verdict in the Maddox Williams case. There was also a plea I attended in Bangor in the Hillary Godding case. And so that case is resolved, but for sentencing. It has been my understanding that the provision in statute that comes into play now gets sort of activated once sentencing occurs. My understanding in the Godding matter is that sentencing will be by the end of this month. My understanding, based on the reports out of the court yesterday, is that the Maddox Williams sentencing is in December. So it would be my expectation that the agency is preparing their summaries to release like they did in the Marissa Kennedy case and the Kendall Chick case. And that we will be following up with them to understand what additional information can now be made public.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Timberlake.
To follow up on that same line of questioning, if the Maddox Williams case had been sentenced, would we still be entitled to receive the internal documents of DHHS, because I'm not concerned about, you know, the mother that beat the child and that. I'm concerned about who in DHHS released the child back to the custody of the mother and removed it from one custody, the custody chain. That is the stuff that I think, at least I, as a member of this committee, that are interested in, and how that system failed, that we let people go back to people. We let children go back to people that should have never been allowed to. And would that information be released, or would that be kept privacy because somebody would declare? Because I think it's very important that we understand that moving forward here, that if we're ever going to see any of that information, or even if the OPEGA staff is going to see any of that information of the internal documents through DHHS.
Oh, thank you, Senator Timberlake. If I could also just add some clarity to what I said further. We in OPEGA have now the full case files. The four full case files have been produced to us, and we are well into deeply reviewing every document, every report of that nature. It would be my professional opinion that that is the best evidence of where we can have questions about who did what, who did not do what, when it happened, when it did not happen, how it happened, what did the manual say should have happened. So I think that is a process we are working through parallel to what the committee is doing here. And so we do have more than what would be released publicly as after these trials. So we OPEGA do have it. The question on the table, of course, for the committee is, can the committee members have direct access? And that's the question that the committee has now voted to go to court about.
Yes, and my question was I thought I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm wrong often when it comes to legal stuff, but I thought I read in here that all of the findings of how the child was injured and that stuff was released as part of the case, but some internal documents over who the caseworkers were, the information that was transcribed between them and passed on, that information was not given, out, and was not given out to you folks.
Oh. I can confirm, Senator, that the documentation we have, reports are, the names are all there, the caseworkers, the people who made the referrals, the folks who were mandatory reporters. It's to the extent there is documentation, and there's a lot of documentation, that information is present in the files I'm reviewing.
Thank you.
Senator DeChambeau.
I'm going to make a comment to that. I bristle and am fearful. I am not of the opinion that I want to know who the caseworker was. We know the office. It probably was a Machias office or Bucksport or what. It was an office. I wouldn't mind knowing, you know, when the call came in, when mandated reporting came in, it came into an area, and then how long did it take before it hit a caseworker? Are we looking at, as a former state employee, I'm not crazy about letting that information of who, identifying them. I mean, they have their own rights about protection. I'm more of the whole system, and I'm a middle manager kind of person. Where did it stop? Where did it fail to go? And, you know, because again, I pointed to all the documentation we get from DHS, and they say they do these things. Where did it fall? And what kind of decision making?
Well, thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate that follow-up. And what I would say to you is, in my trying to provide my level best assurance to the committee that we are digging as deeply into this as we can, and to the extent the agency has taken the position, for what it's worth, that they are not turning it over directly to the committee but are turning it over to OPEGA, they have done that second thing. So it is up to us now as the staff to really dig in. And then when we write these things up, as you know, Senator, when we have drafts, our process by statute calls upon us to go through certain processes where the agency has an opportunity to review and respond. That's all very well documented. That's all very well above board. But there is also a process then where we, because the legislature has given OPEGA special access to this type of information. Tax is another area. We are still subject to the requirements that the agency is under to protect information as appropriate. And so even in the case where the committee one day would access this through the court proceeding, it doesn't transform that information into public information. we would still be in the context of looking at it in executive session. We would be doing it at that point together, no doubt. But that's sort of what we're doing right now. And okay. And again, it's with all the protections that other laws, this law, everything governs us. So,
Senator Timberlake.
So with that being said, with you having that information and these cases being settled, when can we expect a report out of the OPEGA committee to us with your findings and facts to be presented to us? Because I would think that would be a full-time, people would be working on this full-time and only this until we get this done. It was something we talked about in January, that this becomes a top priority over everything else.
Indeed, Senator.
So when could we expect a report?
At the meet. There may be an organizational meeting of the new GOC in January, but to the extent we can have this teed up for the February meeting, that is our goal, to deliver it then.
Follow up. My question would be, why does it take that long? I would think it could be done in within a week or two. I don't understand why 3 months is a necessity at this point in time. This is something we know is coming. Our staff is working on it. You've got the files. I really question that.
Well, and I appreciate the question, Senator. I will say there are four cases, and there is an extensive amount of documentation. And it is very important for us in terms of our processes to go through and make sure that we have adequately understood the facts, understood them in the context in which they occurred, and then done appropriate follow-up if there's something in the file that leads to more questions that can't be answered by the documents themselves. That is a very labor-intensive process. I can assure the committee that we are doing a so-called rapid review, that this is all hands on deck in terms of this is number one, but it is, in my opinion, going to take that amount of time. It is not something, as a practical matter, we could deliver to this GOC. I do regret that very much, but I want to make sure I do the job correctly and fully, and once and for all, you do get the answers that you are entitled to.
I won't lie to you, I find that very disheartening.
To be clear, though, this is not a surprise to this committee. This timeline was discussed at our last meeting. Representative Arata.
Thank you. So let's say hypothetically that you see a pattern of behavior by a certain employee, or a pattern of bad decisions or misconduct. Are you able to go back to the department and find out if that individual was just simply transferred to another job or within the department? Or are there other files that you can have access to if you request them?
I think all of that would be within the context of the inquiry that we're doing, that we would understand if there were human performance breakdowns, that we would be in a position to follow up on that and ask the questions that we need to, and that there would be answers provided. So I am comfortable that that is something that we could follow up on in these cases.
Okay, thank you.
Further comments, questions? Are there any other actions this committee needs to take with respect to enforcement of the subpoena?
I don't believe so, Senator, but I would defer.
No, I think I have my marching orders. I'll be in touch with chairs and leads soon with a draft of the filings. And then once I get sign-on, we'll get the court filing made. And then it sounds like the committee is separately going to send a letter to the Superior Court, which I think is a good idea. So I think I have what I need at this point.
Okay. Any further discussion on this topic? Seeing none. Thank you. Last